Hello and welcome to the Human Condition podcast on Resilience Radio, with a conversation that applies to absolutely 100% of us on sleep. There's probably never been a time like today when we've had so little sleep. I think the research will both surprise and challenge you. But if it's a struggle for you and or your family, there are ways you can sleep easier. I'm Lee Hatcher, in a conversation with Sarah Piper, registered psychologist at the Resilience Centre. So why is a psychologist talking about sleep and not a doctor?
You should talk to a doctor first, absolutely, because sleep is a physical thing, but sleep is also a psychological thing. And often when you see a GP, they can assess whether they think it's more of a physical issue or more of a psychological issue. And that's why you might get sent to a psychologist about sleep.
Why would I be sent to a psychologist about sleep?
I think when you see a psychologist, you get more time to process out loud some of the issues in your life at that time, but also some of the habits around sleep that you have, the lifestyle that you have. So generally you see a GP for maybe 15 minutes, but you see a psychologist for up to an hour, and you have a good amount of time to really get stuck into the issue of sleep.
Is the challenge of sleep more of an issue today, in the rush and crush of today, Sarah?
I think it is. The statistics are telling us that it is. There's 30% of adults who are suffering from insomnia.
Wow.
They say that 70% of high school students are sleep deprived and 30% of primary school students are sleep deprived. So I think that that is increasing, and it's really, you know, people are saying it's becoming a national health crisis.
How amazing.
And if there are problems with a child's sleep, the best thing is to get it treated early. So the research is saying that we get better results from treating sleep in primary school and middle school than we do in senior school. Now, that doesn't mean you can't send your late high schooler to us, but better to look at it early. And even if you're just not sure, even if you just think maybe it's worth checking this out, it might just be one piece in the puzzle.
So insomnia is big today.
It's huge, yeah. People who either can't get to sleep or who keep waking in the night or who wake too early or who just have very poor quality sleep and not getting into those deep stages of sleep.
I've never known this before, but there's a cycle in insomnia as there is, and we'll get to this, as there is a cycle in sleep. So we've got a cycle in insomnia.
Absolutely, yeah. It starts off from some kind of stress or pain or something going on in somebody's life that's preventing them from getting to sleep. They start to have really negative thoughts about sleep. Oh no, what if I can't sleep? I must have 8 hours sleep. So they might have some very rigid thoughts about what sort of sleep they need and what their day is going to be like the next day if they can't sleep. And that obviously leads them to worry and anxiety. And when we have that, we have physical arousal, psychological arousal, which then continues on in not being able to get to sleep.
Yeah, it feeds into itself.
And then we start to do everything we can to get to sleep. We maybe go to bed 2 hours earlier than we really need to, or we start having all these behaviours that are making us try to get to sleep, but they're not helping
us. They just keep us awake.
And they just keep us awake. Yeah, yes. That's right. That's a very common problem that people say, I can't switch off.
Yes.
And
Especially today.
There's so much to be packed into the 2/3 of the day that we are awake that people start encroaching on their very precious 1/3 of sleep time, trying to get everything done. We try to go from doing, thinking,
stop.
To sleep.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's really difficult. So we develop habits that are intended to improve our sleep, which in fact make things worse in the middle of the day, which decreases our sleep pressure.
Yes.
And then we can't get to sleep at night. Or we might start going to bed much earlier than we need to, which means we spend a lot of time in bed just lying there. So we might nap more, and that means that we've lost the connection between bed and sleep, and we start to just think that the bed is just for lying there and wishing we could be sleeping.
Yeah. So you've got to develop habits about this. It's quite an intentional thing.
Mm. We have to have a good connection between bed and sleep. They often say the bed should only be used for sleep and sex. That's it. So to create that association of the bed is for sleeping is a very helpful thing both for adults and children. One of the things that I talk to my clients about is, well, how can we slow that mind down? So, of course, being able to practice mindfulness is very important. Grounding exercises, which is just noticing the senses around you, what you can see and hear and feel. Some of the old-fashioned ways of counting or doing
sheep.
Counting sheep. or we can do it in very specific ways, specific counting ways. Or we can do what's called an alphabet soup, which is A to Z of all the objects that you can think of from A to Z.
Amazing. Never heard of that.
A lot of people, when at night, begin ruminating and they get into this very toxic headspace, which is sort of negative thoughts and what's going wrong and what might go wrong, lots of worry. And I think it's about creating an awareness for people of what they are thinking. So being mindful of their thoughts and being able to change the channel on that toxic headspace and be able to say, I don't like that channel, I think I'll change, and I think I'll just think about the last holiday that I had, or I'll think about what I'm grateful for the day, what are the good things happening in my life, or what was really pleasant today, or what might be pleasant tomorrow. The other way we can stop a racing mind is just to journal, to have a brain dump via pen and paper, not on a computer, but actually using our old-fashioned handwriting.
And leave it there.
Absolutely. Without editing it, without rereading it, just leave it right there and hope that your brain has slowed down enough to go to sleep.
Then turn the light out.
Yes, absolutely.
Every one of us knows how important sleep is at the end of a long, hard day, especially how we yearn for it. But beyond that, why would you say sleep is so important? It's a simple question, I know, but flesh out some of those reasons about why sleep, good sleep, is good.
Good sleep is good because we learn better, we have better memory, we tend to make better decisions, which means that our behaviour in life is better, our social relationships are better, we're more alert, our mood is better, so our emotional health is improved, and of course our energy levels. It's just nice to have energy during the day.
Yep.
And on a physical side, we grow better and our metabolism works better and our immunity is much better in our body.
Big tick to sleep.
Yeah, big, does everything.
Take us through some of the things that are happening with our body and our brain as we sleep, Sarah.
Okay, so the best way to describe what's happening is by describing the sleep-wake cycle. So we have basically five stages of sleep. The first four are called non-REM, and the fifth one is called REM.
Okay.
REM standing for rapid eye movement, which I'll get onto in a sec. The first stage only goes for a little period of time, and that's that interim between consciousness and sleep. And we often, if we've watched somebody go to sleep, we can see it. There's these little tremors. They look different. You just know that something's happening.
I start having stupid thoughts.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And then we move into the second stage of sleep, which goes for a much longer time. And that's where our heart rate slows down and our brain is doing less complicated tasks. And then after another 15 minutes, we move into the delta stage of sleep where our body is actually repairing and making repairs. So that's really helping our physical health, building our immunity.
So how long is the delta stage?
So if a full cycle lasts for 90 to 120 minutes, the delta stage, which is stages 3 and 4, would go from anywhere between about 25 to 40 minutes long. And we would only have, on a good night's sleep, we'd probably only have maybe 2 to 3 of those deep cycles. As I said, that's where all the really good body repairing is being done. And the next cycle, we move into our REM, which is our rapid eye movement. Everybody knows that that's when we dream, and it has been said but not proven that if you watch someone in our REM and their eyes are fluttering, it's that idea that they're watching this really fast-paced movie right under their eyelids.
So what happens there? What is it about REM?
It's the place where our brain is much more active than our body. So essentially, a lot of the muscles in our body are almost paralyzed, except for obviously the essential muscles that keep the heart beating and all that. But the brain is very active in REM state.
Pardon my ignorance, but I've never heard that you'd actually go through numbers of cycles of sleep through the night. I'd always thought, well, one cycle of sleep equals one night's sleep, but you're going through several.
Absolutely, yes. And a couple of those are very deep cycles where we hit the delta stage, and a couple of those cycles are only hitting stage one and two, but they're always coming back to the REM.
You're listening to the Human Condition Podcast. I'm in conversation with Sarah Piper on sleep, which is such a big issue today because of our screens and devices. What is it about them that makes sleep more challenging for us?
Sleep is much more challenging, I think, for the younger generation today than perhaps it was a long time ago when everybody played out in the paddocks for hours and hours on end.
And exhausted themselves.
Themselves, absolutely. So we are indoors more and we're using just our thumbs and fingers than we are our whole body. When we think about it, our body was designed to be used and moved all the time, and that generated good sleep. So it's understandable now that there's a lot more struggle for sleep for some of the young people.
And for a few older people as well. I mean, adults aren't immune from this either.
No, not at all. There's many adults are struggling with the amazing plethora of information they can gather online, and that will keep them awake. Many adults love the gaming side. 75% of gaming is done after 10 p.m. at night. So yes. This is when it's all done.
Yeah.
Older people generally don't sleep as much or as well. It's a developmental thing. That's not a new thing.
No.
But I suppose for older people who have found technology, that would just be another disruption.
Regarding children, I did a video recently on a primary school, boarding school, which has a ban on any devices in the boarding house, 100%. I hardly think the average person will or perhaps can go that far. But when would you say you should be clocking off from your devices for a good night's sleep, Sarah?
The recommended time, Lee, is an hour before bedtime.
Okay.
So that would mean for some people having dinner and then perhaps doing a little bit of study or something they have to do on their computers, and then switching off a full hour before in order to do something relaxing, something enjoyable, something that slows their mind down. That is something that I have worked through many sessions with teenagers as to what would they do for that 1 hour from when they turn their device off to when they go to sleep. And it's something that we spend a little bit of time talking about, which is quite interesting. And it's lovely to see young people rediscover interests and hobbies, go down to the kitchen table and start talking more with their family, interacting, getting out of their bedroom. It's a great thing what that 1 hour can do for people's well-being.
Maybe even read a book.
Maybe.
Rather than the screen. I hear about sleep hygiene, you know, what's good for your sleep. What are some of the things that fall under that kind of definition, Sarah?
Okay, so sleep hygiene is all about the good habits.
Yes.
For getting us to sleep. There's the physical habits, which is eat and drink well and exercise lots during the day. There's the physical room, the bedroom that you have that should be dark, quiet, temperature should be a little low, not too hot. There's the idea of the routine, that we should be going to bed at approximately the same time and waking up at approximately the same time. And we should always, if we want to get 8 hours sleep, we should work backwards from the time we want to wake up. So if that's a 6 a.m. wake up, we should be scheduling bedtime around 10. Now, we don't need to be too legalistic about this.
Because we'll be thinking, I need to get to bed, and that'll keep me awake.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. And then we've got the insomnia problem again. That's right. And also, I think it's important for everybody to be better managers of their time so that they can prioritise sleep. We do sleep for about a third of our life, and it's a very important part of our life. And in fact, the other two-thirds are so much more enhanced when we get good quality sleep.
It's a great point. If you're not getting enough sleep, we all know that feeling of tiredness, lethargy, grumpiness. Are there ways that you can see a lack of sleep impacting on us and our well-being? I'm especially thinking from a psychological point of view, beyond the physical that we dealt with earlier.
Yes, the emotional health is huge for anyone. If they're not getting good sleep, often their mood is going to drop. I think anybody would identify with the fact that when we're tired, we tend to have more negative thoughts.
I know that feeling.
Yeah, that's right. It's harder to make decisions. Therefore, it's harder to behave in the way that we want to behave. So therefore, it's even harder to be resilient. We're not our best self. Everything's just a whole lot harder. So that's why I see a lot of people with sleep problems, because their lack of sleep is affecting their emotional health. And in fact, most people will present with something else. They will present with having a problem at school or relationships, etc. And we don't have to scratch the surface very far to find that sleep could be one of the factors that's causing that.
That's a question you'll regularly ask.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a question that I would ask in 90% of sessions if I had a tingle that was it.
Can I get a bit personal with you and ask some of the strategies that you, Sarah Piper, and maybe your family use to give you the best chance of a good night's sleep? How's that played out in your life?
I'm quite fortunate in that I have had good sleep most of my life, except when I did have a mental health episode at one point after childbirth, and then my sleep was quite affected. Of course, when I had young children, my sleep was affected, but I hope it gives people a little bit of hope that as the children get older and start to sleep through the night, that even the adult sleep goes back to what it was or what it should be. So that's good. I've got four children and I have quite a broad cross-section of sleepers, going from the night owl, not wanting to go to sleep, to the very strict, this is my bedtime and this is what I must do, to the worrying about sleep, and then just being a little monkey and not really wanting to go to sleep on time.
There are a few of those around.
Absolutely. But I think in our household, some of the things that have helped have been, in general, trying to be consistent with bedtimes as the children were growing up. Obviously, changing bedtimes to the appropriate developmental age, not expecting every kid to be going to sleep at exactly the same time. Obviously, just good food, exercise, social connections, all those things enhance sleep, even a good work ethic, etc. But most of all, I think myself and my husband love to sleep. And I think when you love sleep, when you really see there's a value in sleep, you set up a pattern in the house where sleep is valued.
Yes, I'm with you, Sarah. But also just to have it on the radar of a parent, because they'll have education on the radar, they'll have physical exercise, they'll have good food. But I don't think I've ever had that on my radar as a parent to say, yeah, we should actually, as a family, address this and ensure that somehow we get good sleep.
Yeah, and I think it starts in looking at what is the time that we have to wake up, because that's what life dictates, and therefore working backwards with how much, if we need a certain amount of sleep, then we have to go to bed at that time. So generally, preschool children will need 10 to 13 hours sleep. As they get into primary school, we're looking at 9 to 11 hours sleep needed. And for teenagers, shock horror, 8 to 10 hours sleep. You know, look at an HSC student and ask them if they're getting 8 to 10 hours sleep. I mean, not a lot that will be. And that's a shame, isn't it? Because that's their academic priorities coming before their sleep needs. Then we realise that if they're not sleeping, then they're not getting that information into their long-term memory.
No. Can I ask you about napping, power napping, or even siesta? Because I know you've lived in a Greek culture for a few years and experienced the whole thing of siesta there. Were you able to tap into that?
Oh, Lee, when I got to that place, I was so looking forward to tapping into siesta. I thought, with young children, this is going to be beautiful. We're all going
to
sleep after lunch. It'll be fantastic. However, in our family, unfortunately, the kids really didn't sign on to siesta, which was
pity.
quite difficult for me to accept at the time, but which essentially meant that I couldn't siesta because they were all awake. But I did enjoy being part of a culture that took siesta, where the shops did close for that period of time, and people stayed up late and enjoyed the summer evenings, and the children were up enjoying being able to run around and exercise, just run around really in the late evenings and enjoy family time. It was really beautiful that we couldn't really engage in that fully because all our kids were tired by about 8 or 9 o'clock because they didn't have a siesta.
What about napping? Is that a useful thing, do you think?
There's a lot to be said for the power nap. Anything from 2 minutes to 10 minutes, people have found that to be a great help. Anybody struggling with sleep, though, in terms of insomnia, any form of napping is not recommended because it essentially interrupts the biological rhythm that's going on in our body and it decreases that sleep pressure. So usually we want our sleep pressure to be increasing as the day goes on.
Yes.
But if we nap in the middle of it, we've dented that sleep pressure, which means we're not as tired at night.
Sarah, I think this has been such an important conversation. As I said in the intro, it applies to absolutely 100% of us, and I've learned a whole lot, probably for my good, in this conversation. I'm so grateful. What wisdom. Thank you so much.
Sleep well, Lee.
You've been listening to the Human Condition Podcast. I'm Lee Hatcher. Check out our other conversations and lots of great resources for life on the Resilience Centre website, www.theresiliencecentre.com.au.